On this week's episode in the news, we've got millions on the voter rolls who aren't supposed to be there. We've got a case study in cronyism in Central Texas, and we'll hear about how Strauss canceled Christmas. In our interview, we talked to Kara Ballou with Texas Public Policy Foundation about the state's new A through F rating system for schools. And Carrie Cheshire will close us out with a commentary about the arrogance of the news media. Welcome back to another week of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. I've got big breaking news this week. For that, we go up to Ross Kessig with the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Activists up there in the Metroplex saying there are huge numbers of voters on the rolls here in Texas who have no business being there.
Yes. So according to Direct Action Texas, an organization known for exposing voter fraud, 4 million voters, registered voters on the voter rolls, cannot be matched to anybody in DPS's database. And aside from those 4 million people who we don't know who they are, there's 228,000 folks who are registered voters who are not citizens, according to the records in DPS's database. So some very troubling statistics.
Yeah, and so really two very troubling numbers. 4 million voters, that could include illegal aliens, or it could just be people who are kind of off the grid, not in the database, kind of can't keep track of them. It's hard to tell about that number. But the 228,000, these are people who the records say shouldn't be voting at all. We know they shouldn't be voting.
That's right. The 228,000 number, according to DPS, they're non-citizens. So they may be here legally, but they are ineligible to vote because they aren't citizens. And then the 4 million number that you mentioned, we just don't know who those people are. And the problem is that, we are not verifying the citizenship of everyone on the voter rolls. And so the big question here is, we don't know what the real numbers are. But we should. I mean, Texans deserve to have elections that have integrity, and they should be assured that the people who are registered to vote are, in fact, eligible voters.
Yeah, and so activists there, Direct Action Texas and others, having a press conference about these numbers. What are they calling on leaders to do?
So Direct Action Texas joined a grassroots coalition calling on Governor Greg Abbott to instruct the Secretary of State to actually verify citizenship for everybody on the voter rolls. It's already under the purview of the Secretary of State. It's something they're not currently doing, but they can do. And so since that office is part of the executive branch, it's Governor Abbott could, if he wanted to, immediately instruct, as kind of an administrative order, the Secretary of State to do this.
Yeah, and I think that's something that it seems to make sense. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it, and we appreciate you being there. Keep us updated, and let's see if the governor actually responds.
Thank you.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. Got a Grinch in the house. The reports were that the speaker was canceling Christmas. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so every year, the Speaker of the House traditionally holds a Christmas party for all the members, right, and their spouses and their families. And it's a time, you can imagine all the legislators come down to Austin and get to, hang the district ornaments on the tree,
right,
and so on and so forth. We're hearing reports out of a lot of offices in the Capitol this week that they had heard that the party was actually canceled by the speaker this year.
So now the implication of this is this isn't just a Grinch-like tearing down of stockings from the mantle.
And it's certainly not feeling bad that the politicians don't get their Christmas party either.
Yeah, the implication was this has something to do with the upcoming race for speaker. Joe Strauss, the current speaker, leaving the Texas legislature, leaving an open race for his replacement, and the Republican caucus supposed to be getting together right about the time that Christmas party would be happening.
Yes, the House Republican caucus passed new bylaws where they will nominate a unified speaker candidate amongst the Republicans. This is new for this session. That meeting is scheduled to be held reportedly on the same day or the day after this Christmas party on that weekend. It looks like by canceling the Christmas party, Strauss was attempting to try to stifle attendance at this caucus meeting.
Yeah, we know that he's not supportive of this right. idea of a Republican unified caucus choice.
Right, and he announced his retirement from the legislature just shortly after the caucus announced that they would be going forth with these bylaws. Of course, Strauss himself would not have survived such a thing back when he was originally brought into the speakership.
Yeah, it came in with 65 Democrats and 11 Republicans. Right. He's kind of this Democrat-Republican coalition that put him in the chair to begin with.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so now we're hearing a little bit of not exactly a denial, but it sounds like the party is back on.
Yes, so reportedly the party is back on. House Administration Chair Charlie Guerin saying that there will be a party. It's not clear if it was canceled and rescheduled, brought back in, if it's the Speaker's office has not commented on any of their involvement on this.
Yeah, so some kind of Christmas party yeah. is apparently back on, and then assumedly the caucus meeting moving forward as well.
Right.
Speaking of news related to the race for Speaker, we've got a new entrant into that race. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, State Representative Travis Clardy, a guy out in East Texas, announced this week that he would be entering the race for Speaker of the House.
Okay, so this is another, you know, relatively liberal Republican,
yes.
very low ranking on the fiscal responsibility index, mm-hmm. Getting into the race. Kind of, what's the take on him?
Well, we've seen very little from him in terms of substance for his Speaker campaign, but what we have seen is that he seems to be wanting to appeal to not just Republicans, but Democrats as well. And as a note, Representative Clardy has not signed the pledge to support the Republican caucus candidate. So it looks like he could be looking to appeal to Democrats in order to create a coalition vote for Speaker.
Okay, very, very, very interesting. Well, I appreciate your reporting on it and uncovering all this, kind of some interesting hijinks and it all tying back to the Speaker's race. So appreciate your reporting.
Yes, thank you.
Now let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with Texas Scorecard Central Texas Bureau. Case study in cronyism going on in Austin with soccer. Tell us about it.
Well, it's just another day in Austin. Austin definitely deserves a red card for this deal. They made a deal with a soccer franchise and gave a bunch of handouts to them to try to lure them to come build a stadium in Austin.
Now, this is an existing group out of Columbus, Ohio, right?
Yeah, it was the Columbus Crew, one of Major League Soccer's original franchises, and they made a deal, a terrible deal, giving away a bunch of taxpayer subsidies to try to get them down into
the
city.
So the city's handing out a lot of money to this to a private investment group and to this team to come down to Austin. Interesting thing, they're moving forward, the city's moving forward on the deal, but it may not happen.
It may not, because the Columbus Crew is currently tied up in court in Ohio by fans trying to prevent the move.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember during some of the city council debate on this, there was some citizens who said, hey, you guys realize we're the bad guys here, right? You know, they always hear these stories of some team that's a beloved team in some community and it gets, you know, taken away from the fans. We're the bad guys here.
Yeah, it's awful, you know, and it's, but the blame is really on the city council here. Trying to give away all this taxpayer money and benefits to this company, you know, and Travis County is actually opposing this deal now.
Yeah, I saw that. I just saw that. Very interesting. The county coming in saying, hey, we didn't agree to not collect any taxes.
Exactly. There's this big city-owned land, and Austin City Council is just ready to give it away with no, you know, taxes received from it or anything. And now the county's coming in and saying, wait, hold on. We could use this land to get taxes off of. We don't have to give away a bunch of money.
It's a weird kind of lease back provision where the private entity, they give the land to the private entity then builds the stadium. The stadium is then given back to the city, and then the city leases it back. It does seem like really just an accounting gimmick to avoid paying taxes to the county.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is constructed with duct tape, I think, you know. But the county is saying, look, like, Austin is not a backwater location to where we have to give away all this money.
We're a prime spot for a sports team, yeah.
You know, there's no reason why we need to give all this money
so,
away.
So what happens, I mean, if this litigation stops it, if the city starts building this stadium, could we see some hulking monument to bad government policy, you know, sitting in an open field there?
That would be the worst thing. I mean, if...
Maybe it's the best thing. It would save the traffic problems and everything. It'd be a lesson for the taxpayers.
Oh, but. Absolutely. You know, the team would only be penalized $6 million if they decide to renege on the deal and not finish the $200 million stadium.
Wow. I think this is one, we're going to have to keep an eye on it and see where it goes.
We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Thanks for your reporting, Jake.
Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week Kara Ballou with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Kara, you're an expert on education policy there with the Center for Innovation and Education, and I wanted to have you in to talk a little bit about these A through F ratings that are getting a lot of buzz around the state over the last couple of weeks.
Well, they just came out, and it's the first time in Texas that we're going to have each of our school districts and later on campuses get an A, B, C, D, or F rating from the state of Texas.
Yeah, it's a really neat thing that the state is doing. If folks are not aware, they can go to txschools.org and kind of punch up, here's my district, here's my school, and see how their schools perform on this statewide rating structure. And so it's really interesting, and there's a lot of buzz. Okay, some schools are getting A's, some schools are getting F's. But I wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about what does that actually mean? Obviously, we all know an A is good and an F is bad, but what actually goes into that kind of scoring structure?
Well, what's really unique and important to recognize about the new Texas system is that the majority of the grade, 70% of the grade, is based on the better of your STAR results. And STAR results are looking at whether our children are meeting grade level in math or reading. So the better of how children are doing on the STAR, or if the school is making progress. And why that's so important is because we want to recognize our schools where teachers and education teams are doing a great job with kids, many of which may come in many grade levels behind, but those teachers are still doing a great job with those kids, and so we want to go ahead and recognize the efforts of those schools, even if they don't have high STAR passage rates.
Right. And so, you know, we've had different rating structures in the past. I think, you know, when I was in school, you were exemplary or recognized or acceptable or unacceptable was kind of the grades. But I think the criticism of that in the past has been, oh, well, the exemplary schools have, you know, a bunch of privileged, you know, affluent, smart kids, and you have schools that don't have as many advantages that are doing more poorly from a testing standpoint. And I guess this system is something to come in and say, okay, well, we're actually going to take a look at how these schools are performing year over time, and what kind of progress they're making.
Yeah, it's just a huge change, and I think very unique in the nation and very important, because we know that economically disadvantaged students come in sometimes many grade levels behind. And so teachers may do a lot of work with those kids, and they may make a lot of progress and learn and grow throughout the year, but they still might not pass the STAR exam. And so in previous systems, that school district would have been penalized. And in this new system, we say, well, if your students are learning and growing, we recognize that they may have come in well below grade level. But if you did great things with them compared to similar districts, and if we can see they were learning and growing, you can still get a really good letter grade.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit about, I'm looking at up at texaspolicy.com, TPPF, at your website. It was a really nice kind of summary of, you know, how are these grades actually calculated? And I'm looking at it, and you kind of have domain one and domain two and domain three, and it can be a little confusing. Can you break that down for us of how exactly the grade gets calculated?
So 70% of your grade is based on the better of your grades in domain one and domain two, or domain two. And domain one, again, is going to be looking at star passage rates. And actually, if your students were meeting or mastering the star test, you score higher the better your children do. So we're really looking there at student achievement. Are our children at grade level in reading and math? And schools that have a lot of children that are at grade level are going to get a high grade in student achievement. Or, alternatively, we'll be looking at domain two. And domain two is student progress grade. And that, again, is going to be looking at our students growing and learning toward grade level each year, or how is your school district doing compared to other school districts with similar levels of poverty. And so we'll get a grade in domain two. So we look at the grade in domain one, and we look at the grade in domain two, and whichever is higher, 70% of your grade is going to be based on that.
And so basically, so this is the first 70%. So the first part of it is, if you've got a school where the students are performing at grade level or better, overwhelmingly, okay, they're going to get a good grade because they're doing what we, I guess, expect them to do. And maybe they aren't making as much progress, but maybe there's less progress to be made. On the other hand, if you have a school where you have a lot of challenges and students are performing below grade level, I guess you're going to look at either whether they are performing better, the district is performing better year over year versus, or if the district is outperforming similarly situated schools. Is that kind of correct?
Yes. And so if you look at a school district like Dallas ISD, Dallas, you know, is one of our school districts that struggled over time, and they received a B in the accountability system. And that is because even they are a very high poverty district, around 87% of their children are economically disadvantaged, but they are doing great things with those kids. Those kids are growing and learning. And when you compare Dallas to other similar school districts, Dallas is actually outperforming. And so when we looked at Dallas's grade, it was a B in domain two because they were making great progress with their kids compared to similar districts. And so they ended up with a B overall in the accountability system.
So that's the first kind of 70% of the grade. Then that's averaged in with domain three, the closing the gaps segment, which is 30% of the grade. Can you explain what that means? Because I have trouble understanding, like, what's the difference between closing the gaps and the school progress? How are those different?
So in closing the gaps, we're going to look really specifically at different groups of students who historically have lagged in their educational attainment. And so we may look at our English language learners, children that are learning English for the first time, or our migrant children. And we may say because those students have lagged in attainment, we want to see those particular groups or subgroups of kids start to improve. We want to close the gaps between them and children who have historically done better. And so we're really looking at, how did your English language learners, for example, do, and are they improving as a subgroup?
Okay, and so you average all this together, and that gets the final grade. So what were the overall results statewide? I mean, there were plenty of A's, but there certainly were some F's. What are we looking at kind of as a statewide profile?
Well, the data indicated that about 185,000 children are currently in DNF-rated school districts. And on a very broad stroke, that's a strong signal that the children in those schools are not reading and doing math at grade level. And so we really need to focus in and work to help those children and help their teacher teams improve over time. On the flip side, we had a lot of big urban districts, very, very high poverty rates, and some other large districts received Bs. And again, they were anticipating maybe lower grades. But when you looked at these urban districts and you said, are your students learning and growing? Are you doing well compared to other districts? If the answer was yes, they got a high grade. Yeah. We also saw that charter schools really had a lot of strong A's in the charter. There were 36% of charter schools that received A's and 16% of traditional ISDs. So I think it highlighted those A schools and charters where we probably need to focus and say, what are they doing well at these campuses? How are they getting their students to learn and grow? And how can we potentially replicate those great things across other schools and campuses across the state?
So, you know, I've seen a little bit of pushback out there. Obviously, the teachers' unions and kind of traditional, the usual suspects in the education crowd saying, oh, this is unfair to the districts. This is all based off of testing and test scores and those kind of things. What do you say to address the criticism that says this isn't a very good way to evaluate schools?
Well, the most fundamental obligation that our schools have is to teach our children to read and do math at grade level each year. And that's probably the number one expectation of parents. This A through S system cannot capture everything wonderful that's going on at a campus, but it can tell us a lot about these critical skills, math and reading. Are our children at grade level or growing toward grade level? And it's easy to understand because we're familiar with letter grades, community members and parents are familiar. And so they're able to say an A or a B probably indicates high academic work. And a D or F signals that we probably need to help some students and teachers to ensure they're getting those critical skills. And so I don't think it can capture everything that a school is doing. I think it's a look at those really critical skills.
Yeah, you know, I think it was funny. I saw a little of the criticism. They said, oh, this system is this is just unfair. And somebody responded and said, well, this is the same system you use in your school to grade the kids, A through F, right? And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
I will say, you know, on that note, of course, nobody really likes standardized testing. But the STAR test itself is written and designed and approved by Texas teachers. And the questions are all available online for parents to see, and they can even see every question their child took and how their child responded and corresponding information about the right or wrong answers and how that STAR question aligned to the Texas curriculum. So while we don't all appreciate standardized, you know, testing, it does give us some really valid indications and signals for a lot of our students about if they're doing well at grade level and learning the Texas curriculum.
Right. Well, I'm running out of time, but before we finish, tell listeners, where can they find out more information that you have up at Texas Public Policy Foundation? And then, you know, also plug in kind of what websites should they go to if they want to learn more about their schools?
If they want to learn more about their schools, they should definitely consider going to txschools.org. That is the Texas Education Agency's website, which contains an incredible amount of invaluable information, and you will be able to tell right away a lot about how your particular school district's grade was calculated. And they're welcome to visit me at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, texaspolicy.com. I'm an education expert and work on innovative ideas to improve outcomes for our children.
Great. Well, I appreciate your expertise on it. Thanks for coming on the program and sharing it with us, and I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
In this week's commentary, Carrie Cheshire talks about what sets Texas Scorecard apart from the legacy news media.
In response to President Donald Trump's continued criticism of the news media, a chorus of newspaper editorial boards recently denounced his comments as, quote, destructive to democracy. But are their defenses fact or just more fake news? With this week's commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Organized by the Boston Globe, newspapers across the country recently published editorials in which they criticized the president and defended themselves against charges of fake news. Who will bring attention to the problems we experience every day if the press isn't there to report it? Who will hold government accountable for inaction, corruption, and poor decisions if the press isn't there to shed light on them? Asked the New York-based Queens Courier. But citizens should ask themselves, how is relying on the so-called press to hold elected officials accountable working out for you? These so-called defenders of the public interest and guardians of the truth are perpetually silent regarding inaction, corruption, and poor decisions at every level of Texas government. They were mum, or at least willing allies, of corrupt lawmakers and bureaucrats during the University of Texas admission scandal. They were mum, or willing allies, when State Representative Byron Cook made war upon the speech rights of Texans, hijacking an ethics bill and perverting it into an assault on the First Amendment. And they were mum, or willing allies, of a system that has allowed rampant sexual abuse within the halls of the Texas Capitol. In each case, it wasn't the Texas legacy media that broke the story or held lawmakers accountable. No, no one at the Houston Chronicle, the Dallas Morning News, or the San Antonio Express covered these events. Instead, it was the people who did. At UT, it was Regent Wallace Hall, a conservative businessman who personally launched the investigations into corruptions into the admission system and doggedly persevered despite costly legal battles. With Byron Cooks, it was individuals in his own district who ignored the glowing praise afforded to him by the mainstream media and organized campaigns against him, forcing him to announce his retirement a year ago. And with the Capitol's culture of abusing women, it was everyday citizens armed with camcorders that began breaking the story. And when they started being effective, the mainstream media partnered with those same lawmakers to try to silence them. But back to the boastful newspapers. The Beaver County Times wrote, quote, "Journalists are the eyes, the ears, and the voice of the people we serve. We sit at school board meetings so you know who the next principal will be. We attend the city council meetings so that you know which company is building in your backyard. We journalists sit through boring government meetings and learn about school financing formulas so you don't have to," bragged the Arizona Daily Star. These people apparently envision themselves as some sort of lobbyist for their subscribers. Eyes and ears for the people, maybe. But should newspaper writers really think of themselves as the people's voice, too? We at Texas Scorecard have a different philosophy. We want you to know not just the name of your next principal, but what his qualifications are, what he's getting paid, and whether he's somebody you can trust. And when a company sets up shop in your town, we want you to know how it's going to impact you and whether any of your tax dollars were handed over to bring them in. But even more important than that, we want you to know when and where those school board and city council meetings are being held, so you can go to them yourself and make your voice heard. You know, you can't rely on the legacy media to be your eyes and ears, much less your voice. You must make your own voice heard. Government officials are your public servants, after all, and how can they know what they ought to do unless you tell them? The freedom of the press doesn't belong to the dinosaur media simply because they own money-losing newspapers. When our founding fathers referred to the press, they meant the printing press, not some arrogant group of writers who envisioned themselves as intermediaries between the people and their government. Freedom of the press means the freedom to speak, to publish, and to be heard, and it's the birthright of every American. Here at Texas Scorecard, our mission is to give you the tools you need so that you can find your own voice and make it heard in the halls of power. I'm Carrie Cheshire with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
That's all the time I have. Come back next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.